Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the week's big political stories. My name is Mike Siluma. First on the list of top stories this week will be the ANC's electoral crisis, where the party has failed to register local election candidates in a number of localities, some quite important for its performance. With our panel, we'll try to understand how the party could get things so wrong. After that, we'll look at government's efforts to extend the South African social security net and whether we are using the correct mechanisms to address poverty in the country. This, of course, off the back of the announcement and withdrawal of Social Development's green paper on social security retirement. Let's welcome now our guest, Usmonga Wonke-Shoba, who's the Sunday Times Politics editor, Zemasa Matiwane, who's the Sunday Times Politics journalist, as well later as Dr. Lungile Mondi, who teaches economics at Wits University.
Man, this econ is racist.
I've never, ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on
in?
On the point of order.
Let us start with you, Mr. Shoba. What is the nature and extent of the ANC's candidate registration problem?
It's massive, Bramike. The affected municipalities are more than 90 municipalities, according to court papers filed by the ANC in court. It's huge numbers. In most cases, you find that they've failed to register. Not even a single PR candidate to contest in the elections, which means that if the elections go ahead without those candidates being registered, the ANC would not be able to contest those municipalities, even though they might have ward candidates, but it means that they won't have any PR candidates, meaning they won't be able to form a government after the elections. It's huge. But Mike, such things are not new. You may remember in 2016, the National Freedom Party failed to register about 2,000 candidates. It was the same matters, people being candidates in wards where they are not registered, issues with IDs and also payment, but it has never been to this extent. I think the ANC is in serious trouble, and the people in Lotswana House realize that they are in trouble. That's why they panic. That's why they went to the electoral court to try and rectify this problem. It is massive.
Now, just in terms of numbers, you know, we're talking about 90 municipalities. This isn't about 90 out of how many in total? Just so that we all get an idea of the seriousness of the issue.
No, in the country we have about, I think, 273 or 74 municipalities that we have in this country. So 90, it means we are approaching half of that, and it's a huge problem for the ANC for them not to be able to contest in such municipalities. I was talking to someone who's very much involved in the elections of the ANC. He was saying the problem is huge because what they plan to do is that they wanted to improve their votes from about 54% to about between 55% and 60%. And if you can't participate fully in about more than 90 municipalities, that means you won't even go near those figures. In fact, they are saying that they would dip below 50% if the matter is not resolved.
Zemasa, do you want to come in here? If we look at what Mr. Shoba has just outlined, what do you think is the potential in terms of the number of municipalities, particularly the key municipalities that currently are controlled by the ANC, that they stand to lose, you know, if they lose in their court contestation at the moment?
Well, as things stand, the ANC has failed to register candidates 94, yes, 94. And, you know, it's Can I make an example with KZN? Here you have 33 municipalities that are affected, and out of that 33, you have a whole district whereby they did not register any PR candidates for each municipality that falls under that district. And there are about five districts in that municipality. And it's a district that the ANC has always struggled with, but they have been making inroads for quite some time, especially with, you know, the unfortunate incidents with the NFP in 2016. So they were able to, you know, under Zululand to have Upongolo and another municipality, but now they do not stand a chance to even have one municipality. So that is how bad things are, just to zoom into one area.
In terms of, just to come back to you, in terms of the bigger metros, are they in danger in the bigger metros?
Of course they are, Barbara Mike, especially here in Johannesburg and Tshwane. They have failed to register a number of PR councillors in Tshwane, and in Johannesburg they even failed to register what candidates. These are metros where they are on the back foot. In Johannesburg, they are ruling through a coalition with smaller parties. And they might not be able to bring enough votes on the table to be able to form a coalition with those smaller parties, because these are smaller parties. One of the parties bring one seat, the other ones will bring two, and those are the parties that make up that government. And if the ANC is unable to contest as many as six wards in the city of Johannesburg, they might be in a position where even if all those parties can come and try and donate to them, they might not be able to have a government, because they will fall short. And maybe you might see a situation where a party like the DA is in a better position to negotiate a government in that kind of era. And in Tshwane, it would just make matters worse, because they are already in the opposition, and for them to come back, it will be really an uphill battle.
A lot of people, you know, will be looking at this and scratching their heads, you know, to say the ANC is the biggest political party. It has been contesting elections since 1994 without fail. We would expect that by now they've got a well-oiled electoral machine that has got a timetable, that has got the procedures for contesting elections, that this should be like normal procedure in the party. Where do you think things have gone wrong here?
Having listened to the ANC leaders trying to explain what went wrong, I don't think they have a full picture of really what happened. There's been a lot of finger pointing with people, with leaders in regions and provinces pointing fingers at Luthuli House, and they are claiming that provinces used to upload their own candidates, and this time around the process was centralized at Luthuli House, and the office that was in charge of the process was the office of the Secretary General, and they are saying that it's them who really failed to deliver. But if you talk to people at Luthuli House, they are telling you that there are many issues. Firstly, they admit that there's a very short a space of time to put together the candidate and go through all those processes that they had outlined that they were going to do in choosing candidates. And then after that was done, they had serious issues of candidates who were registered who were chosen as candidates where they are not registered as voters. For instance, Bramike, I leave my home in in Durban and I live here in Johannesburg, and I forget that I'm still registered in Durban, but I'm a candidate here now. And if you register me as a candidate here in Johannesburg, it will surely kick me out of the system because I'm not registered here. Those were some of the issues. And it seems as if there were also a communication problems. We heard Jesse Duarte last week explaining that there were instances when they couldn't get hold of the people that they needed. She made an example of the regional secretary of Tshwane that they tried to get hold of and they couldn't get hold of him until the deadline. Also, he's saying there were issues with the system as well. There were times where the system just couldn't upload. They're saying an hour before deadline, this was the worst time. And they have the UDM backing their allegations. The UDM leader, General Misa, is saying that they reported the message to the IEC as early as 10 in the morning to say that your system, there's something wrong with your system, please fix it. But they say it wasn't fixed. So there are a lot of issues. But it also points also, Pramay, to an ANC that is in disarray. You have a suspended Secretary General who's not there. Now we have an acting Secretary General. There may be a lot of issues in that office, maybe that we don't have information on what is happening there, because if you talk to people who are lying to the suspended Secretary General, they seem to be saying, oh, this is what happens when you suspend a Secretary General. Now you have someone who's acting in office and things like this are bound to happen. And yeah, it tells you about an ANC that is really in crisis. And it seems as if its administrative side is also in crisis as much as its political side is in crisis.
Zimasa Matiwane, just off the back of what Mawike has just been saying, that I've seen somewhere else, you know, a reference being made to the turmoil at Luthuli House, that it may have played a role. You know, for example, they are having staffing issues there, you know, where people are not being paid, etc. You know, very unhappy staff there. But also these factional things that maybe some people may think that they stand to benefit, you know, if the party has a poor showing this time round, you know, as part of their broader fight, you know, against the other faction, you know, of President Cyril Ramaphosa. Do you think that there's credibility to that theory?
Well, on the part of staff, you know, Pramike being demoralized, and you know, the DSG even said that they are emotionally fragile due to not being paid for quite some time, and you know, they still worked hard. And, you know, to secure over this many registrations. But the fact that she was mentioning the mental state of the staff and the fact that the staff spoke of a go slow just before the deadline, that would have probably had an impact. On the issue of maybe sabotage, I don't know. I don't want to say I don't think so, because I mean the ANC surprises us all the time. So there is no evidence to point to that at this moment. However, you have regions where the secretary of the region has been asked to step aside because of a court case, and that is the person who has been handling the books, who knows where what is and has, you know, probably been doing these processes prior. And now you have that person replaced by someone who is just, you know, picking up at the last minute and trying to put everything together for National to register. So, you know, some people who I have spoken to have blamed some of those issues to the lack of, I guess I could say, qualified people in the right positions, right from the regions, not only at Luthuli House.
What sort of fallout is there likely to be as a result of this? Do you think there will be any fallout at all, or will it just be accepted that it was just, you know, an accident, you know, and people making honest mistakes? Do you think that there may be political fallout out of this?
Brian, there's already people saying, so this is what the new dawn looks like. You have people who are saying this never happened during the time of the former president. And if we have to have an NEC tomorrow, I think those are the issues that will come out, and the former president's supporters in there will just lay all the blame on President Ramaphosa's doorstep. But Bramaik, it seems as if there is also disagreements within the ANC how this matter should be approached. Many are looking at the Concord to say that the Concord might just save them, but there are some who are asking questions about whether that court has powers to make such decisions. I saw a tweet this morning from the chairman of the ANC in the Northern Cape, suggesting that if the court was to do so, it would be a serious case of judicial overreach. So that tells you that although many in the ANC are looking at this and praying and hoping that the court rules in the favor of the IEC, so that there are people who are really questioning that, and those are going to be the debates once there is an ANC meeting, a formal ANC meeting that is taking place, where the same finger pointing that as we have seen in the past week, is surely expected to take place.
So for now, the next development is going to be waiting for a decision of the Concord.
Yes, it's a wait and see game now. The IEC is expecting that decision will be made this week. And we are all looking forward to that decision, because the decision has to be made as early as possible, Bramak, so that if the Concord says that the elections are going ahead, the IEC will have enough time to put its machinery together so that the elections do take place. And more further delay would mean that the IEC won't be able to be in a position to put together a free and fair election with all the resources in where they are supposed to be. So they are saying that they need a decision as soon as possible, so that if it's against them, then they are able to move ahead and implement what they need to implement in order to have the elections.
Yes, Masa Matiwane, the last word goes to you. I've heard some commentators saying that because the ANC is the biggest party, it's a big player in our political landscape, if it is not able or allowed to participate fully, it might take away from the outcome of the elections. They are hinting that there may be a whole lot of spoiled papers, for example, if the ANC is not on the ballot papers. Do you see that kind of scenario happening?
Well, the ANC being the biggest party is the mandate that it's given by South Africans, and it expires every cycle of 5 years. So I don't believe looking at it from that perspective is the smart thing to do. And adding to that, I mean, even if there are spoiled ballots, there will be an election result, so it does not matter. I think there is a precedent that has been set. 2011, the IFP could not register, I think somewhere in Zululand and Mpumalanga. 2016, the NFP did not pay. I think they missed it by a couple of hours, the deadline to pay, and they were not allowed. So I think for the interests of a free and fair election and for democracy, no favors should be done for the ANC. And what would perhaps, in my opinion, bring some sort of a protest from South Africans would be to see the courts doing favors for the ANC because they are the governing party.
Sibongiwonke Shoba, as Masa Matiwane, I think we will leave it here for now. Please keep an eye on developments. Maybe you give us an update again next week.
We'll do that, Bramaik. Thank you.
Thank you.
The English Premier League commentary. Stream live and exclusive to you for as little as £3 a day. Go to sportsradio.co.za. Show support for your favourite team, match of the day, or any game you'd like to follow. Plus up to 2 hours of great sports audio a day. Sports Radio, home of the English Premier League live commentaries. T's and C's apply.
Now for the other big story of the week, the decision to publish and then withdraw a Green Paper on Social Security and Retirement. The question we ask is whether we're using the correct tools to deal with social security challenges faced by our country. And joining us now for the conversation is Dr. Lungile Mondi, who teaches economics at Wits University. Welcome to the show, Dr.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Now, we seem to have a twofold problem. The current need, where among other things, we've got a 34.4% unemployment challenge or problem, if you like. And secondly, a future social security problem, you know, that speaks to people's retirement. What should be the role of a social security system, broadly speaking?
A social security system is a social contract. A good example of that social contract is the Scandinavian example, where society agreed for reconstruction following the Second World War on a set of values about what defines them, as well as ensuring that in that society, no one is left behind. Therefore, the state having a pivotal role to play in providing education, shelter, and social security, that is pension. But that's being done in partnership with private sector, labor, and broader society. So this is the value that that society agreed to. So therefore, when our department, our minister, Minister Zulu, put that green paper on the table, part of her thinking probably had to do with just how deep inequality, poverty, and unemployment is in South Africa, that this economy excludes, and therefore perhaps we need to come to some form of a social contract of what it means to be South African. Unfortunately, this had been misplaced in the sense that the South African government and all its institutions has failed South Africa. And in that process, a new social contract has to talk to first a complete re-engineering of the state, that is the ANC itself changing what it represents, but more importantly, the government of the ANC also showing signs that it's leading, it's listening to South Africans, and it's putting South Africa interest first by itself getting rid of some of the deadwood, the corrupt, and those that have been implicated in the Zondo Commission. So without that, really, that green paper was never going to have any support because it's being seen as a faction paper trying to assert a particular faction within the ANC, which is in complete disarray.
But Dr. Mondi, let us look at broadly the tools that we have been using to try to alleviate poverty in South Africa, by way of you know, such as it is, our social security network. We have got the child grants, for example. We've got the child grants, we've got the old age grant, and now we've got the COVID grants. Are we following the correct strategy? Because it looks like we are responsive to sectoral need, as opposed to having a comprehensive approach.
Yeah, again there, just to take us back, the Mbeki regime understood that growth should underpin any form of social support and social security. So when we are debating in the early 2000s, the introduction of child support grant and sending teams to Brazil to understand the Boza Familia and how it could be replicated in South Africa, with government having taken pain and shown its true colors, that it was a government that is capable, government that will listen, that government which was interested in growth, but at the same time to ensure that no one is left behind. That is why the child support grant had a lot of support from South Africans, because they were seen as part of South Africans sharing and pulling up those that were left behind. However, I think as years passed by, the ANC shifted to the left and believed that the growth and the role of business did not matter and overstated the role of government. And not only did it overstate the role of government, it looted and undermined many of the state institutions. Therefore, it's been one path, a path that is following and listening to what is popular. So what we're seeing here is a party that is in disarray, it's a society that is in facing collapse, and there is desperation of clinging to power. And the root of doing so is becoming populist. So all these policies really, whether it was extension of the age of accessing this grant, the support around the COVID that we see now and the recent green paper, these are all populist policies which are hiding behind the plight of the poor to try and keep the ANC and the, and its allies in power, given their poor management of South African resources and their appetite for power. So this is nothing but really an ANC wanting to cling into power, given its unpopularity and mismanagement within itself, as it cannot pay salaries, but also with the broader South African society, as all institutions fail and infrastructure collapses.
Now, Dr. Mondi, you've just alluded to what you what you call the populist choices that have been made. You know, if you look further down the line, what would be the likely consequences of, you know, if we continue on the trajectory we're going on?
So what we've seen is that the South African government has embarked on a borrowing spree. We're aware that it's engaging the IMF and the World Bank, as well as the BRICS Bank, the New Development Bank, including the African Development Bank. So it's an economy that's going to be deeply indebted, and therefore basically, I think in the next 4 years, it's going to find itself having to go and negotiate part of this debt with all the lenders, and therefore cut the state drastically going forward. So South Africa is going to undergo similar experiences as many African countries, our neighbors Zimbabwe, Zambia, Tanzania, of social adjustment processes. But more importantly, also a shrinking economy, a falling infrastructure, and then probably in the next 15 years, it will start rising again. And it's really a symptom of a long-term decline that started in the 70s under the apartheid regime, and where the South African economy has been on decline. And we saw some improvements in the late 90s and early 2000s due to the commodity boom. But really, I think it's really a failure of taking those hard decisions by the South African authorities from the apartheid regime and continuously even now. And therefore, I think South Africa is going to have to face its consequences, a failing state, a falling economy, and really declining living standard. And up in 15 years' time, a resurgence of growth again. And unfortunately, that's the story of South Africa. And it's a story, again, of African countries. And I think here, we're witnessing what has happened before in the rest of Africa.
Mm. And just lastly, I mean, you are projecting that there will be a turnaround, say, in give or take 15 years. What will precipitate the turnaround? That we've learned our lesson, or that we'll have another commodities boom, or what will spark the turnaround, you know, when it happens?
I think there'll be new institutions that will emerge outside the ANC of South Africans who care about the country, but also being pressurized by lenders who will be so indebted to South Africa recovering because they want to be paid back what is being owed to them. And that will be the main driver, really, emerging of new political formations, new leadership across society and business, as well as lenders who are putting pressure on South Africa to get its act together because they're being owed lots of money, even though at that point, they'll probably be repaid a cent on a rand. But that would be the expectation coming from these different players who want to turn the corner of a failing South Africa and recreate a new vision and a better life for all, which the ANC has really failed to push through.
Okay. Well, folks, that's where we'll wrap up the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. And we'd like to thank our guests for this week's conversation, Dr. Lumgile Mondi, who teaches economics at Wits University, Bonga Wongeshoba, who's the Sunday Times Politics editor, as well as Zimasa Matiwane, who's the Sunday Times political correspondent. And by the way, you can find a podcast of this conversation on iono.fm, on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to source your podcasts. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear that mask, and avoid crowded places. I'm Mike Siluma, signing off.